Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
As long as the Matrix exists, the human race will never be free.
Placed in here. What better time than now?
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the front. I am your host, AI. I am completing. Up. There we go. How's everybody doing? It is Monday, July 26th, 2010. Just a quick note here. I did not get the chat room up until just now, so it's up. If anybody has to refresh the page, refresh it, and you will pop up into the chat room. So like I said, it is July 26th, 2010. Tonight, big show on the front. Have a very special guest, Mr. John Moore. He is a former Green Beret, military intelligence officer, homicide investigator, turned private investigator, now does a talk radio show and is also a Planet X researcher. Mr. Moore has also released a video that you can view on YouTube. It's a series called Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. I suggest everybody check that out. tonight's show, I'm going to have open phone lines as usual. Feel free to use them. I probably will not answer calls unless we get into it right away, but I probably won't answer calls until probably the second hour. I have 2 hours blocked off for tonight's show. I don't know if we'll use them all, but better to have too much time than not enough. So we'll be here as long as Mr. Moore can hang out with us. He should be calling in about quarter after the hour. A couple other things. The Front website is up and operational. It is the Front. It is frontradio.net. Not used to the web address yet. frontradio.net. The site is in its infancy. I will be adding much more to it as time goes on. Just haven't had a chance over the last couple days to get to it, but I will start adding a lot more content to it and change it around a bit. Also, if you want to visit us on our Facebook page, it is The Front on Facebook. Been very active on that over the last few months. Lots of great videos, great news articles, info, all that good stuff. What else we have? We have, if anybody needs to shoot us an email, it is thefront@live.com. All right, thefront@live.com. And also, tonight's call-in number is 1-917-889-3064. That is 1-917-889-3064. Thank you, BC Express in chat. Just threw up the Front's web address. So let me say hello to everybody in chat tonight. We have BC Express, Bigfoot Lives, Eyes Wide Open, Guest 2914, Hum 4209, Piano Depression, Spooky Mom 1. Thanks for showing up, everybody. And all of you guys listening out there through Facebook and other ways, other mediums, I appreciate it. We had a great show last Friday with our guest, our special edition of the show, with our guest Sheldon Day from the Light of Day show. And I'd like to say that we have hit a record for audience listens to that show. Right before I went on the air, the official count was 286. So that's growing and growing. And I just want to say I really appreciate everybody telling other people or, you know, referring people, whatever's happening, the word's getting out, and it's definitely a cool thing. I really appreciate it. So tonight, this is the deal. Mr. Moore, he is very, very knowledgeable. He's been doing this for a long time. I think tonight's show, he has information and perspectives on just about every world event that's happening right now and that has happened. It's going to be very easy to get off on different directions and I could go into what's happening with the border, at the border with Mr. Moore or in the Gulf. And we might get into some of that a little bit in order to prove other points. I'm not sure, but I'm going to really try to keep to natural event. His video series, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, basically the gist of it is that global warming is being used as a guise, which, you know, obviously if you listen to this program, we're definitely in agreement with that. The guise I know it's being used for is carbon taxation, and that's basically a way to monitor you all day, every day, because everything you do is going to emit carbon, so they'll need to track and trace that. It's just basically another form of control, another way to take away your freedoms, put you on lockdown. The screws keep getting tighter and tighter, people. So it's just one more way to do that to you. But Mr. Moore's take on global warming and what the government is using for is to really hide the cause of it, which would be the 10th planet entering our solar system. This would be the same planet we were talking about last Friday. This would be Planet X, Wormwood, Nibiru, whatever you want to call it, the Destroyer. It has many, many names. So this is what we're going to be talking about. We had Mr. Day on, Mr. Sheldon Day on Friday. He gave us a perspective, the perspective of an independent researcher and an enthusiast and a talk show host and an astronomer. So Mr. Moore's angle on this same subject is going to be a little different. He's going to be coming from, like I said, a military background. His information basically comes from connections within that arena. So I thought it would be a good thing for us to get varied opinions, varied views on this thing. You know, I think we can all attest to the fact that weather is going crazy around the world. If you don't have a chance to watch news or to look into this stuff, you know, I understand those of you that still happen to have jobs these days, and if you have some kids and a family, then your time is short, your time is precious, and you know, spending it with your family is the most important thing to do. So you may not be aware of the things that are happening in the world, and you may not notice enough to put the dots together. But let me just tell you, I look at all this stuff constantly. Sometimes I have to take 24 to 48 hours off and not look at anything just to keep my sanity. But, you know, there is the weather that's going on is incredible. We have doubled the earthquakes around the world since 2003. There is massive flooding taking place all over the world that you're not hearing about. There are earthquakes happening all over the world that you're not hearing about, and fairly intense earthquakes. There's earthquakes happening in strange places that they don't normally happen in, such as Washington, D.C., Arkansas, New York area, New York to Detroit. There was a 5.5 a little while ago. We have things falling out of the sky that we don't hear that much about. We had a massive meteor streaking across five states in the upper northwest. If you see the video of this thing, you'll ask yourself, why didn't I see this? Why wasn't this everywhere? It's fairly impressive, and yet not really a word was spoken about it. So, you know, yes, I know I've talked about some of these things on last Friday's show, but I don't know who's listening tonight that maybe missed that show. So, you know, the weather is going crazy, and I don't really care what the news media has to say. I don't care what the president has to say. I don't really care what any official has to say, because they've lied to us so much that really, why should you believe anything they say. So I just kind of use my own eyes and ears and look at what's happening. Look at the physical evidence, which would be the weather. The only thing on the that really controls our weather, the main factor in weather control, is our sun. It's entering an active cycle. I think it's entering what they're calling the 24th cycle. I'm not sure. And the sun is becoming active. Sunspots are becoming very active. And this has a direct effect on our planet. So we're really trying to find out what's affecting the sun in order for it to affect us like that. And if there is a Planet X out there, we should all hope and pray that there's not. But if there is, we're going to hear about it tonight. And hopefully we can also get into some preparedness strategies, some survival strategies. That's one of my main focuses for tonight. I want to get some info on that. So as my Friday guest, Sheldon Day, his forte was not geological escape or survival preparedness. So we really didn't delve into that with him. But Mr. Moore seems to be very knowledgeable in those subjects. So we'll be covering those. And if any of you guys have questions while Mr. Moore is here, please fire them off in chat. I'll get to them as soon as I can. And again, if you want to call in, you may just have to hold for a little bit just in case we're in the middle of a discussion, but I'll get to your call as soon as possible. And once again, the number is 1-917-889-3064. So we should be hearing from Mr. Moore in about 3 minutes or so. And if Mr. Moore, if you happen to be listening right now, you can call in any old time you want. I'm ready. The other thing with this subject is, you guys, I'm not an expert on this. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say I'm really an expert on any subject. Welcome, Tree Hugger. Glad you made it. And that's why I'm having these people on. I mean, I've studied the globalist agenda and the New World Order since 9/11. I had to get into that due to personal reasons because it affected me directly, personally. You know, there's a lot of, loose strings kind of, or I don't know what you say, just some info doesn't seem to add up here and there. And then when you start to factor in a natural event that's being kept a secret, well, a lot of things seem to make sense. So that's really my whole intention with exploring this Planet X thing. I mean, we have had the official word handed down from NASA, NOAA, and the National Academy of Sciences to prepare for what could be very volatile solar storms in the near future, sometime between now and 2012. These solar storms have the potential to knock out our power grid for many years. And if you can just use your imaginations for a second of what that would turn society into, you can see that it wouldn't be very pleasant, and that you taking personal preparedness measures is your best bet to keep you and the people you care about safe. So, I hope none of this stuff ever happens, but if it does, and we did have the opportunity to explore it and learn about it, I think it would be very foolish of us not to do that. So that is why I am looking into this stuff, and I've gotten a lot of interest from you guys out there, so I guess I'm not the only one thinking this. But like I said, you just take a look around at the weather. You take a look around at the craziness going on with conflicts all over the world. And, you know, you get into perfection. I don't dismiss it. I don't really dismiss anything. It's just something I personally haven't gotten into. I'm very spiritual, but I'm not a big Bible person. But I'm just referring to that as far as prophecies go. I believe the I Chi, which is the oldest prophecy known to man, as far as I know, it also mentions end times such as what we seem to be living in right now. There's a lot of debate on that whole thing. The Mayan calendar, since it seems to be the most publicized to me, I get a little wary of that. But like I said, I don't dismiss anything. I believe anything and trust nothing. until it seems to, you know, make sense. I've never blindly followed any bit of information or person's ideology or whatever. I've just never been that easily swayed to do that. So let's see here. I'm just wondering, starting to get a little behind here. I'm wondering if Mr. Moore has the number to call in. We'll give him a couple more minutes. If not, I will give him a call. And, and here we have a call, and let's hope it's him. So let's check it out. Let me see. Hello, is this Mr. Moore?
Darren, John Moore, good afternoon.
John, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I was just, have you...
Darren, you're breaking up.
I am breaking up.
Okay, I hear you now.
Okay. hopefully it's not electromagnetic interference. have you been listening to the show so far?
I have not, so I'm clueless as to where we are at the moment.
Okay, I just basically gave the audience a rundown of who you were.
Okay.
I told them, make sure I got all this right, former Green Beret.
Go ahead.
Former military intelligence, former homicide detective, turned private investigator, Planet X global warming researcher, and radio talk show host.
Well, that's not a bad little summary. Yep, I can live with that.
Okay, you want to add anything to it?
No. Some people wonder how a person could have done as many things as I have, but I've been at it a long time, so I have. I'm still investigating murders, by the way. I was speaking to a man this morning. We're going to try to get together over lunch and talk about a homicide that I started work on three years ago that remains unsolved. And at least I think I've solved it to my satisfaction. I just need to convince some authorities to go after this guy.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah. So Planet X.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me just give you a little info, Mr. Moore. I don't think that the majority of my audience has really gotten into this subject. And I honestly think that the whole subject of, you know, whatever you want to call it, we'll call it New World Order, globalist agenda, you know, dovetailing into Planet X is fairly new for most of them. So
could you
maybe just give us a brief overview, a simplified or Planet X 101?
Yeah. This is the American way. We want quick summaries of incredibly complex topics, and I think there's a thunderstorm coming my way, and hopefully won't knock us off the air, knock off my telephone service.
Okay.
If you hear crinkles and cracks, it's lightning.
Okay.
I was approached by two researcher friends of mine independently. They didn't know one was going to approach me or the other, but about this topic about 2000 or 2001, and they came across this topic, and once they told me about it, I thought, well, these guys, they both need tinfoil hats real bad, because it didn't make any sense. I went ahead and approached a friend of mine who you might say is an insider, and he basically told me the same thing. He said, John, I need a tinfoil hat, but I'll check it out. So he checked it out. He got back with me about 6 weeks later, and he says it's true. The government's known about this since 1979. They've been planning to deal with it and building tremendously expensive, well-built underground bunkers and shelters to deal with it since the early 80s. And it's real, and it's coming, and it's going to hit us. It's going to hit us hard. So once I got that confirmation, I began my research, and that's been, I guess, about 9 years ago now. It's been a long road, Darren, and during this time, I managed to one day be having lunch with a friend of mine. He and I have been friends since we were served in the Army, U.S. Army Special Forces together on an A-team. He went on to leave the Army and get into the U.S. Navy, and he served on submarines as a Navy SEAL. And we're having lunch one day, and I found out that he attended a briefing in 1985, a classified briefing put on by the U.S. Navy regarding rising ocean levels and abrupt violent climate change. since that debrief, which it became a debrief, I've debriefed another 24 submarine veterans on the same topic, classified briefings put on by the U.S. Navy about rising ocean levels. And when I say rising, I mean rising 400 feet on the coastal areas of this country in a matter of weeks, and violent, abrupt climate change.
Is that, now, Mr. Moore, or John, is that, is 400 feet, is that still, because I've watched your video series,
right.
And you mentioned the 400-foot mark in that series.
Right.
That's still the
Well, as far as I know, I've got no information to contradict that.
Because, honestly, John, if you've seen, like, 2012 and the day after, that wave is a
right.
lot bigger than 400 feet.
Well, there is precedence for waves as big as what we saw in that film, 2012. If you go out to mesas in Arizona, those big flat-topped rocks, you'll find seashells on top of them. You
yes,
go to the highest points in the mountains, in the Himalaya Mountains, you'll find seashells. The bones of a whale have been found in New Hampshire. And I can give many, many other examples, but there have been waves as large as what was depicted in that film.
Okay.
Now, my information comes from the U.S. Navy, and their information comes from the best PhD-qualified scientists that deal with these things.
Okay.
Now, they could be wrong. You know, the water could be 200 feet, it could be 1,000 feet. And this is their information based on what they know and all the information that they have access to. 400 feet's bad enough, quite frankly. The map on my DVD shows what North America will look like if the oceans come up 400 feet. That will wipe out the infrastructure that supports about half the people in this country. About 150 million people live that close to the East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, and of course the Mississippi Valley and the Great Lakes are going to be very heavily flooded as well. The U.S. Navy says, not John Moore, the U.S. Navy says the Great Lakes will merge to become one Great Lake, extending all the way up to Hudson Bay, with Wisconsin being gone, and the Mississippi River being a river 50 to 100 miles wide and 100 to 200 feet deep, taking out all the low-lying areas between the Canadian border and the Gulf of Mexico. For example, in my area right where I live, southern Illinois is basically going to be underwater. If you fly down the river or you look at a topographical map either way, you'll see most of the Missouri side of the Mississippi is fairly high bluffs, and most of the southern Illinois side is pretty flat, and there are some exceptions both ways, but that's the way it goes. There's
okay.
also going to be a lot of seismic activity. The U.S. Navy once again said that on the New Madrid seismic zone, there'll be at least 3 9-point-plus earthquakes. Between the water, the river getting as deep and as wide as it will be, and the earthquakes, the country will be literally split east-west at the Mississippi River Valley. Now, U.S.
Yeah.
NORTHCOM, United States Northern Command, is already splitting U.S. NORTHCOM east-west at the Mississippi River. They're doing it right now. But let me give your listeners some simple Google searches they can do to find the what we call in my profession as a homicide detective, circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
And here's the Google searches. Google search number one, CIA and the word Denver. When you do that, Warren, you'll find that the CIA, going back to 2005, was making press releases about moving from Langley, Virginia, 85 feet above sea level, a Washington, D.C. suburb, to the Mile High City. NSA, we also call no such agency, National Security Agency, and the word Denver. They're abandoning Fort Meade, Maryland, and they're not only going to Denver, but here's some other Google searches you can do. Utah, they're building an extensive computer complex about 20 miles south of Salt Lake City in the desert. And I've been there, Warren. It really is the desert. They got sandstorms, the whole nine yards.
John, let me ask you: when they build a communication area like that, are they working with a private corporation to do that as well? Or
typically, when the government builds things like this, they put out bids, and yep. private contractors will bid on the work.
So like a major corporation, like say Comcast, could be involved in something like this.
Well, it could be. I mean, okay. there's big jobs and there's little jobs. Any undertaking like that, now, there could be one general contractor that would bid the entire job, and then they would bring in subcontractors to do whatever needed to be done, electricians, plumbing work, concrete work, and so forth.
Okay.
You know, building a fence, doing surveying. There's just dozens and dozens of things in a big job like that. Typically, it would be a general contractor that would bid the whole project, and their subs would do all that kind of work. But NSA, National Security Agency, anybody who saw the film Enemy of the State with Gene Hackman, there's a quote in there, which is a true quote, about 18 acres of Cray mainframe computers underground at Fort Meade, Maryland. That's true. That really is accurate. They're moving all that to south of Salt Lake City, about 20 miles. And here's the reason they give, quote unquote, the local power company can't provide enough electricity for us. Well, I know, and many people know, that these power grids sell electricity back and forth to each other all over the United States. So that's a fabrication.
Yeah.
You know, obviously and clearly it's a fabrication. Here's another Google search.
Okay.
The two words, Plum Island and the word Kansas. Plum Island and the word Kansas.
Yeah.
Now, Warren, if you and I were going to set up a research facility to study really fun things like anthrax and foot and mouth disease, highly contagious, fatal animal diseases and human diseases, wouldn't we put it on an island in the Atlantic Ocean? Would that be a smart thing to do, don't you think, Warren?
It would, you know.
It would be. That's what they did.
That's
what they did. They put it on Plum Island out in the Atlantic Ocean, about 100 miles from New York City.
So are you insinuating that that it will be on an island again?
No, they're moving into Kansas.
Okay, well,
Google has an image search you can do, and you can look at topographical maps and aerial photographs of Plum Island. The reason they state they're moving, Warren, is quote unquote, there's not enough room on Plum Island anymore. You look at the aerial photographs, you look at topographical maps. It's about 200 acre island. And you see a few buildings and a lot of green, an awful lot of green. 200 acres is a lot of real estate.
Yeah.
And, anyway, so that's obviously a fabrication also. And they're moving
to the
most productive agricultural real estate on the planet, Kansas. What a stupid thing to do.
So do you have any personal insight or I mean, do you have any personal opinions on why they'd be moving it to that location?
Well,
I mean, probably the same reason.
These choices frequently are political footballs that decisions get made in Congress and favors are done back and forth to among these congressmen who have authority on these committees.
Right. I was going to say it's probably along the same lines of thinking as throwing the new Denver airport into Tornado Alley. So.
Well, a lot of these military bases that have been built beginning World War II were built all over the country as political payoffs so that each congressman could get something, no matter how small, in his district. Every congressman wants some military spending and military payroll in his district, which is why our military, beginning at World War II, was spread out all over this country. And that's very likely what's going on with this Plum Island Animal Research Facility.
Hmm.
So here's another Google search.
Okay.
Seed, as in garden seed, tomato seed,
yep.
pumpkin seed, seed vault, and the words Bill Gates. You'll find that Bill Gates helped provide the funding for the seed vault that was built in less than a year on an island in the part of Norway, just inside the Arctic Circle. Now, I've been around some commercial construction work, Warren, and you're going to build something on an island in Norway and near the inside the Arctic Circle. Well, first of all, you want concrete? You don't call up the ready mix truck.
Right.
You got to
right.
build your own batch. You got to build your own batch plant.
Yeah.
You're going to bring in workers. Where are the workers going to live? You know, you're on an island in the Arctic Circle. Everything has to be brought in by air or by sea. And they did this in less than a year. It's an incredibly short time span.
They completed that in less than a year?
Less than a year. It was about,
wow.
I've read conflicting reports, 6 to 8 months for a very large commercial steel-reinforced concrete structure underground.
Yes, I've posted information about the seed vault on my websites, and so I do know something about it, but I did not know that it was completed in that amount of time. And you know, when you brought up the whole thing about how do you actually get it built there, I never even thought about it. But so it must have been a massive project.
It's a massive logistical undertaking. I mean, they weren't building Hoover Dam, you know, it wasn't that big, but it was big. It was big enough that. And to do it in that short of time, they probably ran 16-hour shifts, two shifts, 16 hours a day, probably working 6, maybe 7 days a week to get that built in that period of time. And they probably did it right beginning at the end of the worst part of winter, trying to get done before the beginning of the worst part of winter the following season. That would be the window that they attempted to get it done. That would make sense. 6 to 8 months would be what they call summer. I mean,
right.
once you're inside the Arctic Circle, summer is kind of it takes on a different characteristic than we're used to.
Yeah.
But I look at logistics and a lot of these things. Moving the CIA from Langley, Virginia to Denver, for example, is incredibly disruptive. You know, people have families, friends, churches they go to, children in school. They don't want to move.
Right.
From,
I mean,
you know 2,000 miles.
Yeah, people can just think of what it takes just to move themselves when they've moved,
right.
Never mind in an organization like
right.
that.
Right. And basically what they do with these people is they give them an ultimatum. Do you want a career and a pension and a paycheck? Pack your bags. Otherwise, your career is toast. That's the choices they give these people.
So why do you think they chose Denver? Elevation and closer to the famed airport?
The airport, first of all, Denver did not need a new airport.
Yes, I know.
The old one at Stapleton was served quite well. They moved enough dirt to dig out the Panama Canal.
Yeah, it's been going for 17 years, hasn't it?
Well, there's about 250,000 square feet of office space underground there, if not more. There's a huge underground facility there. Jesse Ventura did a great job of bringing it to people's attention. I think that TV is not the best medium for doing investigative journalism, but it was a start. It alerted a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have a clue.
Yep, I agree. I saw the series actually, and I was a little disappointed in how they made it so hokey. But there was definitely
well,
some good
was.
Information
now,
in
now
there.
I can give you an example of hokey. Jesse and I love Jesse Ventura to death, but he walks up to this mural, and he stands there commenting on it. Now, that doesn't anybody can do that. Investigative journalists would have found the contract specifications for the mural. Got a hold of the artist and found out and interviewed the artist as to what they told him to put on this mural. Now that would be some real investigative journalism.
Right.
And under a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, they could do something like that, but they're probably in too much of a hurry. You know, it's a lot easier to walk up to it and make comments live on the camera.
Yeah, and I think he kind of relied on his tour guide, Mr. Jay Widener, for that too, also,
right.
You know.
Right, right. But, here's the deal with Denver. Denver will be the capital of the United States west of Mississippi. Atlanta, Georgia, which is the highest major city above sea level east of Mississippi, will become the capital east of the Mississippi, Atlanta, Georgia.
That's the highest elevated major city?
East of the Mississippi.
Really?
East of Mississippi, yes, sir.
Wow.
It is.
Hmm.
I was kind of surprised to find that out myself. Now, Augusta, Georgia, which is basically a far suburb of Atlanta is also getting an NSA facility. NSA is getting spread out all over the place. But this
okay.
is circumstantial evidence
yeah.
that the government is doing very big, very expensive things for no reason that makes any sense, Darren.
Right.
None at all.
Now, as far as that's concerned, do you think that the missing trillions of dollars that have been going on since September 10th, 2001, do you think that's where a lot of this money has gone? And then we're speculating.
Well,
I know.
It goes back. It goes back way. Let me tell you. Give an example. My hometown, St. Louis, or what they did beginning in the early 1980s. And I'll make this as quick as I can. There was about 1,000 acres outside of St. Louis that was taken over World War II for a munitions plant. In the late 1950s, they took about 40 acres and they built a small plant there to make nuclear material for the Department of Defense. It was shut down in the late 1960s, early 1970s. In 1979, they announced a Superfund cleanup project at this 40-acre site. And I was training out there with the Army, U.S. Army Special Forces, and I watched them dragging some job trailers, and it was no big deal. A couple of years later, they announced they were shutting down the entire military training area because of nuclear contamination. Well, that was my first red flag. The men I worked with, we were all young men having children. We heard about radiation possibly being there. Without the Army's knowledge, without the Army's consent, we brought our own radiation detection equipment with us on training exercises, and we were all over that training area. We knew for a fact there was nothing out there but normal background radiation. So I started doing a little investigation of my own, beginning in the early 1980s. What I determined is that what they built there is what they've done all over the country at these Superfund cleanup sites. They've built underground command and control centers. I did FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests. I was able to determine that they had, for example, 500 telephone lines going into a no-big-deal job site, construction job site, which could not possibly need more than 50 phone lines on a really good day, 50
right.
phone lines. And that's just one small example. Here's the deal, Darren, about these Superfund cleanup sites. Any congressman who is told he's got one in his district, here's his attitude. Get this radioactive stuff cleaned up. Get it out of my district. I don't care how much it costs or how long it takes. I want it cleaned up, and I want it out of here. And that's the attitude of Congress in general when it came to these Superfund cleanup sites. Darren, almost nobody understands the technology and engineering in cleaning up nuclear waste. Almost nobody understands how long it takes. And most important of all, drum roll please, how much it costs.
Yeah.
These Superfund cleanup sites became black holes of unaccountable money for decades. And that's what they did all over the country, is build these underground bunkers using the Superfund cleanup as a cover. You know, I spent a full day, debriefing a woman who was a Department of Energy employee at this particular cleanup site. And she had her eyes open because she'd been wondering for years about the levels of security that they had. They had colored ID badges that allowed them to go into some administrative areas and not go in other administrative areas, just like you would have compartmentalization at some kind of military installation.
Right.
For no reason that made any sense. But you can't question something like that if you're an employee, otherwise they'll fire you.
Of course. Yeah. You know, and that's you mentioned compartmentalization, and that's where a lot of people have a disconnect with anything, you know, of this nature. They just don't understand that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, right. Well, people will flippantly make statements like, "Oh, an outfit as big as the federal government can't possibly keep secrets."
Yeah.
And my response is, you saw it on my DVD, Global Warming, which the government isn't telling you. My response is two words, Manhattan Project.
Yep.
Now, my father and my grandfather, they were plumbers. They both worked at Oak Ridge, Tennessee on the Manhattan Project, along with about all over the United States, more than 100,000 men and women worked on the Manhattan Project. My grandfather had a certificate signed by President Truman thanking him for working on the Manhattan Project, taped to the wall of his garage. That's what he thought of that. But
yeah.
compartmentalization.
Stuck it on a rusty nail on the wall.
It actually was exactly that, on a rusty nail. But that's precisely how they keep secrets. They compartmentalize. Everything is on a need-to-know basis. If you don't need to know, guess what? You don't know.
Right. And they did. They
managed to have more than 100,000 men and women working on the atomic bomb project in World War II, and almost all that 100,000 were clueless as to what they were actually working on.
Yeah, well, I realize that, and I try to use this example when I talk to people just in their everyday jobs, whoever they work for. I say, you don't know what decisions are being made at the top of your organization, do you? You find out when you need to know. It's the same. And, you know, that tends to make them go, oh, okay, well, maybe, you know, but...
I understand.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, people are trusting. They want to think that people are doing the right thing, but unfortunately, it just doesn't appear that way.
I know. People want to believe, and I did too. I went into the U.S. Army as a 19-year-old private 43 years ago, thinking that my government was a good government and we did good things, and you know, we only went to war to fight evil. I believed all those things, Warren, and most young Americans do, and very few combat veterans hold those feelings anymore. In fact, I can't think I've ever met one.
It must be so. You know, my grandparents were both veterans, and I used to talk to them about some of this stuff, but I didn't really go into it because, you know, as they were getting older, I didn't want them to, you know, maybe realize that what they thought they were doing wasn't exactly what was going on and have them feel bad about it. But I understand and I have sympathy for, you know, veterans that have been involved in it and now realize that what they took part in really wasn't what they thought it was.
Well, the last war that we fought that was valid, really something we should have been involved in, was the War of 1812.
Mm.
Every other war, and there was no exceptions. The Korean War, we got involved in because of treaty obligations. But the rest of these wars were all based on fraud, lies, and fabrication. Every one of them, including the two we got going right now, soon to be three.
Yeah, soon to be three. I agree with you 100% on that. It's looking more and more imminent that that something like that is going to happen. Which, you know,
it's so ironic. We need to talk about this a little bit, Warren.
Okay.
The United Nations Security Council has five permanent members: the United States, England, France, Russia, and China. Any one of those has veto power. Any one of them. Now, there is a nuclear program in Iran. There's no dispute about that. It's a French, Russian, and Chinese nuclear program with French, Russian, and Chinese scientists and technicians, French, Russian, and Chinese equipment, and French, Russian, and Chinese supplies.
Right.
If the French, Russian, and Chinese left, there would be no nuclear program in Iran. It would be finished. It would be over. And here's what's so ironic. We have the United Nations Security Council voting sanctions against Iran for the nuclear program that's being run by three of the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council.
So are
what's
you saying
wrong
it's
with
a
this
sham?
Picture?
Are you saying it's a sham, John?
What's wrong with this picture? Of course it's a sham.
I know.
Now, I'm sitting out here. I'm deep in the mountains in the Missouri Ozarks, Warren.
Yeah.
I'm 45 minutes from the nearest red, yellow, and green traffic signal. If I know it, how come everybody else doesn't?
I don't know. And I ask myself that question a lot because I'm in the mountains of Western Massachusetts. I'm not
okay.
That far away from a stoplight, but I'm pretty far.
Right.
And I say the same thing, you know. And that also leads me to believe that a lot of the information, even, you know, you get
now. What I said is not, it's, you know, what I just stated about this nuclear program in the United Nations is not a secret. It's pretty well known.
Right.
It really is. It's
it's well known to people who want to take the time to look. You're not going to hear Katie Couric tell you tonight at 7 o'clock.
I met Katie. She's just as cute as can be, but I wouldn't trust her for a New York minute.
She's got a forked tongue on her. I agree.
Oh, boy.
but
she did a story. We had a client who got caught up in some police intrigue locally here. It was something else. We'll save that for another day.
Okay, yeah. you know, so that, you know, that's one thing that I think about is how can a guy like me find this stuff out? How, you know, when I think that I have information or I know things that, that pretty much anybody, if they took the time to look, could figure out.
Right.
I'm no genius, you know, that's for sure. And so it leads me to believe that maybe we're supposed to be looking at this information. Maybe this is another entire way to divide and conquer. And with the probability of a natural event taking place, well, then that would even make sense also, because then it's just one more thing to...
Well, they're in a hurry.
Yeah.
They're in a hurry, Darren. They are. They know they have limited time before all their shiny toys will be pretty much useless.
Okay, so let's get into that. Let's get into that, John. What Planet X, to my knowledge, is what you call a brown dwarf, a big iron cannonball flying towards.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. Well, it's not the first question people have is going to hit us. No, it never has. It swings through here about every 3,600 years. It hasn't hit us yet. If it did, there'd be nothing to worry about anyway. That'd be the end of Earth. It's 3 to 5 times the size of Earth, with a much larger iron nickel core, and your term iron cannonball is actually fairly accurate. Professor McKenney, who's a personal friend of mine, he describes something he calls action at a distance. Now, a much smaller object has action at a distance. We call it our moon. It's about 250,000 miles away and far, far smaller than Earth. But it manages to move all the oceans up and down 24 hours a day, 12 hours up and 12 hours down. So that's an example that anybody can see of action at a distance. You get a much larger body, 3 to 5 times the size of Earth, even within 1 million miles, it's going to have dramatic effects on our oceans, on our poles, possible pole shifts, on our weather, interacting directly with us and with our sun, which of course affects all our weather. Almost all weather on Earth is a direct consequence of energy coming at us from our sun. And people want to bring up HAARP. I know HAARP can change weather. Typically it can change weather in a few hundred square miles for maybe a day or two, maybe even three, before they have to shut that big radio transmitter down. That's what it is. It's the world's largest radio transmitter, and let it cool off. They can't run that thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they cannot affect all the weather all the time. They can affect a rather, you know, when I say a 1,000 square miles is an area 100 by 100 miles. They can affect an area maybe that large for maybe a couple of days, and that's about it. That's all they can do. Not that that's any small thing. They can probably steer a hurricane by making one side of it warmer and one side of it cooler, pretty much like you and I can move a grocery cart.
Yes, I was going to say they probably use it for a catalyst or to,
right.
You know.
Yeah, they can take advantage. You're right. They can take advantage of a pre-existing condition. If a hurricane forms, they can take advantage of that and drive that thing around just like you can drive a shopping cart. And they can manipulate weather. Yeah, they can, but not all the weather all the time. The bizarre weather we're seeing all over the planet is a consequence of changes in energy coming from our sun, for the most part.
Right, right. And that leads me to this. In your video series, you mentioned the phases.
I do. Phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3. I think we're nearing the end of phase 1, quite frankly. The U.S. government is in a hurry before phase 1 ends to get as much done as they can while the infrastructure is holding up and working properly and normally. Because when things start to go south and normal commerce can no longer take place, it's going to hurt them as much as it hurts the rest of us.
Right.
In terms of, you know, they rely on UPS and the Postal Service and FedEx as much as any of us do.
Right.
To move stuff around this country. They rely on the telephone grid working. They rely on the power grid working to accomplish what they want to accomplish, which their goals are to get their shiny new world order all in place and ready to go before they get shut down also. Of course, ultimately, Darren, their plan is to eliminate 95% of the people that live on this planet, ending up with about 500 million people, 500 million souls left alive, and them controlling the majority of that.
Right. So, you know, you sound like you are in agreement with me. I picture... And this is what I was this is what I was referring to when I said the information that, that I can get where I tell people about the New World Order and what they're doing. I think that a lot of that I'm supposed to be able to find out if I look. And
right.
And I really think that the true New World Order happens after this natural event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they as far as they're concerned, yeah, they intend to reach their goal and have it all in place and come out of their shelters or deep underground bunkers when the storms have settled down, the oceans have settled to their new levels, and our climate becomes whatever it's going to become. There's a range of possibilities of what's going to happen here, Darren, ranging from fairly disruptive to the end of the world as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say fairly disruptive, 400-foot rise in sea level is pretty much the end of the world as we know it. The infrastructure will be broken, and we will never see this infrastructure put back together the rest of our lives. It may be generations before it's ever put back together in any semblance of what
right.
we think of as normal now. Now, there's a lot of evidence that this planet has gone through this multiple times in the past. One of my favorite topics to point out in relation to this is a topic called Forbidden Archaeology or Hidden Archaeology. There's a number of authors that have done excellent work. One is Jonathan Gray. He's written a number of books. One of them is titled Dead Men's Secrets. I really like it. Another is Michael Cremo, C-R-E-M-O, Cremo. And he's written a couple of books also on this topic of hidden archaeology, forbidden archaeology. What archaeologists are really looking for is to recover ancient high technology. You go back 12,000 years ago, and there's examples of what was going on. There's a place called Kashmir where that really nice wool comes from, that disputed real estate between India and Pakistan.
Yeah.
If you were to go there tomorrow morning, Darren, with the right kind of equipment, you could find where a nuclear weapon was set off there about 12,000 years ago.
Really?
If you were to go to the, yes, sir. If you were to go to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula tomorrow morning, you can find a location where there's literally hundreds and upon hundreds of acres of green glass covering the desert. Now, before August 1945, almost nobody understood how you could get the temperature of the sun at the surface of the earth. Well, in August 1945, we all found out due to what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That green glass in the Saudi Arabian Peninsula has been there about 12,000 years.
Hmm.
There's other locations in France and other places in Europe where they are radioactive right now from nuclear weapons that were set off about 12,000 years ago. And last but not least, Jonathan Gray mentions this in his book, Dead Men's Secrets, and I have verified it through private sources. There's something called the Black Knight satellite, which has been in a polar orbit for, the government estimates, about 12,000 years. It's 40 by 70 feet. It's on a polar orbit about 23,000 miles high, just below the Van Allen radiation belt. This is real. And I verified privately that every U.S. senator knows what I'm talking about, without exception. Every U.S. senator, every president, and a lot of people within the lettered agencies.
Okay, so what is it?
It's a man-made satellite that's been up there for 12,000 years.
And is it...
High technology, the ability to crack the atom in spaceflight has existed on this planet with just plain old human beings like you and me 12,000 years ago.
Mm.
Part of this stuff about aliens is to keep the false theory of evolution alive.
Right.
Evolution falls on its face if you find out that Michael Cremo in his book has photographs of shoe prints in solid rock. Shoe prints about a man size 9.5 in solid rock. That if you take a 10 power jeweler's loop, you can count the threads in the stitching.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that makes the entire concept of Darwinian evolution absolutely falls apart once you found out that plain old human beings, not aliens, had high technology on this planet 12,000 years ago.
Yes, I'm under the personal belief that I am I do not think we are the most advanced people to ever live on this planet. So that I would.
No, we aren't. We
I
aren't.
Would definitely There's... think that was a possibility for sure. You know.
No, we cannot even now. We cannot put a single object as large as the Black Knight into space. We can put a bunch of smaller objects up there and bolt them together, which is called the International Space Station. We can't put a single object 40 by 70 feet into space even today.
Now this Black Knight
satellite.
Black
Knight satellite, yeah.
Yeah, Black Knight satellite, yeah. I got tongue-tied for a second.
Did that fast 10 times, I know.
Is this visible for, like, amateur astronomers from...
Here's the deal. In 1959, Sputnik went up. Our satellite, about the size of a basketball, went up a few months later. Optical and radar tracking stations were set up all over the planet to observe these man-made satellites. That's when they found the Black Knight, with radar tracking stations. It apparently is black and does not reflect light.
There may be a way
to see it in the visible light spectrum, but radar can see it if it's looking in the right place.
So that answers my question. No, you probably could not see that.
Right.
All right. Okay. Wow. All right. I'm just trying to digest that for a second. Never heard of it.
Well, it's a lot. I'm throwing a lot at you here.
That's good.
And Google searches on a Black Knight satellite is not going to come up with much. I recommend getting a copy of Jonathan Gray's book, Dead Men's Secrets. He talks about it on the first page of his book there. But you're not going to find a whole lot about it. A lot of it falls into the category of internet rumors because it's just Google is pretty much a black hole when it comes to the Black Knight satellite. You won't find anything on there. But a friend of mine in Georgia, I asked him to ask a friend of his who's a U.S. senator, I won't say from which state, about the Black Knight satellite. And here's what the senator's first response was. Well, you tell me what you know first.
Well, he let the cat out of the bag with that answer.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, we never said they were bright. They're just senators.
Ditto that. Understood.
So you think we're in towards the... Oh, could you do this? Could you go through the four phases for the audience?
Well, let's see here. I've got a copy of my paper right here handy, so I can...
Because I think if I recall from your series, I thought you said, like, phase three, people would be talking about the weather as on almost a daily basis. And it could be
right.
My small circle I operate in because I can't keep my mouth shut about it, and maybe that's why people are talking about it. But to me, the weather that we have going on around the world is just, I mean... I see it, the flooding. I mean, there is so much flooding going on that we don't hear about. Russia, China, Poland,
okay.
Mississippi even, you know.
Darren, here we go, phase two.
Okay.
This will be a relatively short period of time, a year, perhaps a few months, perhaps a few weeks. This will be the time when either rising ocean levels or really bizarre weather events become daily news. You will see the propaganda machine cranking up as needed to reassure the population that these are anomalous events and that everything will be okay. Most will believe the government lies.
Yeah. It reminds me of the movie Titanic when the guy is on the deck going, "It's okay," and the ship, the bow is going up in the air.
Well, there is something about the Titanic you may not know of. There was a man named John Astor on the Titanic.
John Astor sounds familiar.
Well, at the time, he was the equivalent of Bill Gates. He was the wealthiest man in the United States of America.
Okay.
And he was invited by a German national who was the head of the Federal Reserve, if I'm not mistaken, to go on this maiden voyage of the Titanic. And then the German... He said, at the last moment, sent a telegram, "Oh, I can't make it, I got a conflict." John Astor, not long before the Titanic sailed, publicly stated that he would use his entire fortune, if necessary, to stop the Federal Reserve Bank from coming into existence. This was 1912.
That's what Astor said.
Yes, Astor said that.
That gets you
he
in
was
trouble.
Set, he was set up.
Yeah.
He was set up by the international bankers. Captain the Titanic was an experienced seaman. It was his last voyage. He knew all about ice in the North Atlantic. He knew very well about ice in the Atlantic. And I think it's highly likely that what he did was something he was paid to do, which was to sail at a very unsafe speed into an area that was known to have that kind of ice. He knew that, and he did it anyway. And armed men prevented men from getting on the lifeboats. Empty lifeboats went off into the ocean with nobody on them. Armed men prevented other men from getting on those lifeboats. John Astor was one of those men.
Now did the captain, did he die or did he live?
I don't recall. Doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, that was kind of crazy of him if he died.
Things happen, and I don't know the answer to your question there, Darren.
Okay.
But the circumstantial evidence is very clear and convincing that John Astor was set up, and those people, those innocent lives, were all lost because of the international bankers wanting to get the Federal Reserve Act passed in the United States.
Yes. Well, I have no problem believing the length to which the international banking cartel will go to. But I don't know about the captain of the ship. That would be, well, for lack of a better term, that would be fairly crazy.
Well, I doubt, you know, a captain of commercial ships, I doubt that they made exorbitant amounts of money. They were probably paid a fair wage. But these people have all the money on the planet, and they made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, well, that's
or
what
they
might
it might have been it. It may have been a combination of an offer of money and a threat to threaten his family.
Yeah,
but
that works.
They'll do whatever it takes. They will do whatever it takes.
Right.
That's how they got Ross. That's how they got Ross Perot to stop running for president. They threatened his family.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. If you ever go back and look at the old footage from Perot and Gore on the Larry King show, the look that Gore is giving Perot, it looks like he would like to kill him right there.
Right.
So I definitely believe that. That guy was definitely a smart man, and his bowing out was kind of odd.
Well, after he threatened his family, he bowed out for about 90 days, which, of course, was enough to lose the election. Then he came back and made a kind of a perfunctory campaign for last couple of months to make it look like he was still a candidate. But by then, the momentum was lost then, and the campaign was lost by then.
Right. They said, make it look good. So
make it look good.
And I believe, you know, I believe the same thing is kind of going on with this whole WikiLeaks thing. I don't know if you're up on this, but I think this whole WikiLeaks thing is, you know, I was listening to the Alex Jones show today, which I listened to for the entertainment, okay? And
you don't need to apologize. Alex used to drive around Austin listening to my show on Republic and call in live.
No, I mean, I like him. I just don't think he gives us the whole story, you know? You know, but he was kind of bashing WikiLeaks and saying he's very suspicious of the whole WikiLeaks thing, and he always has been. But my take on it was, look, I think WikiLeaks was doing what WikiLeaks normally does and leak info. They just got a hold of some stuff, I believe that the owner of it was probably threatened because he handed all this new info over to news agencies, which they normally don't
right.
do. So
right.
I think they did the same thing with him. Look, you're going to stop.
Well, here's the deal with that. If he held on to it, his office would have been a smoking hole in the ground. The only way to save, when you got stuff that hot, the only way to save yourself is to make it as public as you can, as quick as you can. I know an engineer who built a 100 mile per gallon carburetor that would make a 35-year-old V8 engine automobile get 100 miles per gallon. And he thought he could sell this thing and get rich. And I said, no. You want your home and your garage and shop to be a smoking hole in the ground because an F-15 having a practice exercise on a weekend made a mistake? The only way to come out of this thing alive is to give it away for free on the internet. If you want to live, that's what you're going to do. And
right.
He's so far just kept it to himself. He hasn't tried to do either.
Right. Well, they're going to try to discredit all this. you know, these this massacre in Afghanistan, information. Now, they don't want to lose public, and not that they have. Well, I'll say this. Public support for the war was at an all-time low with Bush, and somehow people rationalize it now, but I think people are starting to fade out of that too. And I think that this information will just, you know, the public opinion of the war, to put it any lower, and the public opinion of the president any lower, is just something they don't want to deal with right now.
Right.
So,
right. Well, Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires.
Yes, it is.
And
yes, it is.
It's our arrogance to think we can go on in there and change what no empire has changed in centuries.
Well, we are being led by the best and the brightest, John, Harvard and Yale educated. You know?
Well,
you think they would know that. I mean, I'm public school educated, and I know that.
Right. Well, we're very in that whole part of the world. Now, Afghanistan is not the Middle East. It's South Asia. We're so far in over our heads in terms of understanding the cultures, these peoples, their language, what they think, feel, and believe, that we can't see daylight. The only difference between Afghanistan and Pakistan, when you get to these tribal areas, is a line in the sand put there by the United Nations. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, these people walk across these international borders, and they intermarry back and forth. They speak the same language. They share a common religion. They don't think of each other as people from other countries. They're all cousins. They're all related by blood and marriage.
Right.
So why should we be shocked that they're helping one another and assisting one another when they're all related by... It's like going from Missouri to Illinois, going from Afghanistan to Pakistan. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know.
You know?
The whole thing.
And then the same thing in the Middle East when it comes to Iraq. You used to hear Dick Cheney talking about foreign fighters.
Yeah, foreign
fighters. And not talking about 5 centuries. For 5 centuries, all those dozen countries was one country. It was the empire run by Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. All 12 of those countries for 5 centuries up until 1917 was one country. So just like, you know, that's almost 3 times as long as the United States has been in existence, 5 centuries. For 5 centuries, you could be born in Egypt, go to school in Turkey, and marry a woman from Lebanon.
And now
they're all related. They're all related. They all speak Arabic. They're all related by blood and marriage. And they don't, you know, when an Egyptian goes to when an Egyptian goes to Iraq, that's where we are at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment.
But,
yeah,
you know,
give us
the Iraqis don't regard the Egyptian as a foreign fighter. That's for American public consumption. They're just cousins. Hey,
right.
Cuz, you know, if I go from Missouri to Kentucky, am I a foreigner? Hardly.
Right.
And that's the same thing over there. One country for 5 centuries with one religion, one language, and sharing common values, beliefs, and customs, and intermarrying and traveling freely between all those countries for 5 centuries.
Right. So we're basically just waging war on the entire continent, basically.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Americans, you know, when Americans think of a different country, they think of going from the United States to France. That's how that's how they think of going from Egypt to Iraq. It's going from the United States to France.
Right.
France is a country that speaks a different language, has a different culture. They're mostly Roman Catholic. It's an entirely different people and country and culture. That's not the way it is in the Middle East. I'm here to report. That's not the way it is.
Okay, let's. I don't want to.
You sound like you're in an aquarium there, Darren.
I do. I'm on fire.
How's my audio?
Good. Am I okay?
No, sir. You sound like you're talking through a fishbowl. I cannot hear you, Darren. Just picking up, not even a word here and there. Now
well,
I got you.
Do
you're
you?
Back.
Okay.
Yes, sir. How much time do we have, by the way?
Well, I blocked off 2 hours. We have 50 minutes left. We don't have to use the whole thing. I just blocked that much time off for us.
Okay. All right.
So I'm back clear?
You're back clear, yes, sir.
Okay, all right.
It comes and goes.
Yeah, so, you know, this has happened to me when I first started broadcasting, and I don't know why it's happening now, but...
I don't either. Now, how's my audio been during these?
You've been fine.
Okay. And you're fine at the moment. For a while there, it sounded like you were talking through a fishbowl.
Yeah. Oh, I was. I should... No, I'm just kidding. No, yeah, no. It does that. It sounds like I'm underwater. I think that's VOIP. I think that's just a problem with it sometimes. That's really how I got my start on this stuff. I owned a telecommunications company, and we were using VOIP technology.
Okay.
And then 9/11 happened, and, well, you know, telecom was the hardest sector hit, and
right,
and
right.
So I had to find out why, and once I started looking, things didn't look so great. So, but, okay, we can get off on these.
Well, these rabbit trails are important because there's a lot of connections and interconnections between them. I want to recommend, obviously, and people should get my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You.
Yes, I'm going to post all your information up after the broadcast for sure.
Well, thank you, Darren. I appreciate that.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So let me bring this up. When I was watching your video, I had written down, you know, I started writing questions down, and
right.
I was going to ask you what the state of the thermohaline conveyor was.
Oh.
And then I happened to listen to your program yesterday, and within
right.
the first minute of your program, you drop a bombshell on me.
I know.
So what is the status of this? And for people out there that do not know what the thermohaline conveyor is, it is the Gulf Stream.
Right, and I'm amazed at how many people confuse the Gulf Stream with the jet stream. it's amazing. Okay, the Gulf Stream is water, the jet stream is air. Okay, one of my research associates sent me this article. It talks about Dr. Zangari. Dr. Zangari is a scientist in Italy affiliated with the Frascati National Laboratories and the National Institute of Nuclear Physics in Fermi, Italy. He's been studying the Gulf Stream for 9 years and has very detailed records going back 9 years. What he's found out is that the Gulf Stream has stopped. It may be going as far north as possibly the Carolinas, maybe even Virginia, and that's the end of it. But let's back up a moment and describe what the Gulf Stream is.
Okay.
The Gulf Stream is a river of warm water that moves through the Atlantic Ocean. It comes out of the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean, goes up the coast of Florida, up the east coast of the United States. Once it gets up around Nova Scotia, it turns east and goes straight across over to England, Ireland, and Scotland. It splits, and some goes north, and the rest of it goes south and warms up the coast of France, Portugal, and continues on down and loops back into the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico in a big loop. It's called the Gulf Stream generically. It's also, the scientists call it, the North Atlantic Thermohaline Conveyor. The engine that drives it is the salt content, the salinity of the ocean. Anything that changes the salinity is going to disrupt it. Now, we've got fresh water melting, ice melting at Greenland and at the Antarctic. The ice melting in the Arctic Circle is floating in salt water, so it doesn't change either the salinity of the ocean or the level of the ocean, either one. Melting fresh water in Greenland and melting fresh water in the Antarctic is an entirely different thing.
Okay.
As of December 2004, there was a public announcement that the Gulf Stream had lost half of its mass and velocity. There was a Hollywood feature film that had this as the main plot called The Day After Tomorrow. And there was some science in the film along with a lot of science fiction.
Yep. I just watched that movie again, as a matter of fact.
It's worth watching again.
Yeah,
it begins with a historical scientific fact. That's Larsen Ice Shelf B, as in Bravo, breaking away from the Antarctic continent. That really did happen. And it happened in a dramatic, violent fashion, far faster than the scientists studying it thought it would ever happen. That's real. That did happen. Another plot is the three scientists on an island off the coast of Scotland monitoring the buoys that monitor the weather, the temperature, I should say, in the North Atlantic. Anybody can do this. If you've got high-speed internet, you can monitor these temperatures yourself in real time. And in the movie, the Gulf Stream, the conveyor, stopped. And England, Ireland, and Scotland instantly went to a Siberian type of winter, actually worse than that, because the jet stream came down to the surface of the planet and caused temperatures to drop to 200 degrees below zero instantly.
Freezing.
And once again, that's science. That has happened in the past. In the movie, they depict this by having three teenagers in a museum in New York City looking at a mastodon that had been dug up in Siberia and stuffed and mounted. When they started building the Trans-Siberian Railroad around about 100, 110 years ago, they started running into these frozen mammoths. They were flash frozen, Darren, so fast that they were in a standing position with subtropical plants still in their mouth. They didn't even have time to fall to their knees. Their eyeballs didn't have time to deteriorate. And the meat was frozen so hard, so fast, that when it was thawed out, it was served in Paris restaurants as delicacies for human beings to consume.
Wow.
After being frozen for about 3,600 years.
Really?
That's flash frozen.
Yes.
It takes an incredible amount of cold, incredibly fast, to freeze something three times the size of an African elephant.
Wow. Okay. yeah. So have you, let me ask you, since you heard this last night, I looked for some information on that today. Now, I didn't
about
find
the Gulf Stream?
Yeah, I didn't find a whole lot.
Dr. Deagle has been in contact with Dr. Zangari. We interviewed him for an hour and a half. Friday the 16th, the last hour and a half of Dr. Deagle's show, Friday the 16th, Dr. Zangari was on the air with us on Genesis, and it's archived at the Genesis website. Anybody can listen to it at no charge.
Okay.
Now, this past week, of the 19th through the 23rd, Dr. Zangari was in touch with Dr. Deagle again. I don't know how many times, but Dr. Zangari continues to get more information, and he has concluded to his own satisfaction that the Gulf Stream has, in fact, stopped. Now, that's direct from Dr. Zangari, the scientist, who, besides working with the two institutions I mentioned, he's also getting information from the following NASA satellites: the Jason satellite, the TOPEX Poseidon satellite, the GEOSAT follow-on satellite, the ERS-2, that's ERS-2 satellite, and Envisat. In addition, he's working with the Colorado Center for Astrodynamics Research and the University of Colorado Boulder. This is a real scientist. He's a very serious guy and very detailed in the work that he's doing.
Well, like you said, that was the scenario depicted in The Day After Tomorrow. Is that,
yes, sir.
I mean, but those effects came very, very quickly after that stopped.
What happened in the film was Hollywood.
Right, right.
Here's how Zangari describes the conveyor, the North Atlantic Thermohaline Conveyor. He says, this is the pacemaker, as in using as an analogy. This is the pacemaker for the planet, for the weather of the planet. So,
yes.
No, we're not going to have a dramatic change in weather as quickly as what happened in the film. Obviously, they got 2 hours. They have to be in somewhat of a hurry.
Yes.
But if this proves to be true, and I'm still couching my words here.
Yes.
If this proves to be true, there will be dramatic change in the planet and in the weather of the planet, and it will happen fairly soon. Weeks, months, 6 months, a year, I don't know. But it will be happening, and it will be happening fairly soon.
If this does turn out to be true, then it would have been
Darren, if it's true, it's the most important news in 2,000 years.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how big this is. If it's true, it's the most important news in 2,000 years.
Right. Do you think that we'd ever hear official word about this? Do you think they're trying to figure it out right now? If it is, if something
oh, they've
did
got
happen?
I've known as long as far back as 2002, 2003, that the best PhD scientists on both sides of the Atlantic have been working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on monitoring the Gulf Stream and what's going on with it. Dr. Zangari, it turns out, is one of those PhD scientists.
Okay.
This is important to the survival of many billions of people. These weather changes, if they happen, will dramatically change where we grow food and how we grow food. There's still going to be food, but a lot of people are going to be going without.
Definitely,
now,
yes.
For a first world country like us, it's going to mean price increases. Price increases when you're in third world countries means malnutrition and opportunistic diseases killing people. Rarely do people actually starve to death. Typically, it's malnutrition leading to malnourishment and opportunistic diseases that attack people with these reduced immune systems.
Right. Scenario, because, you know, I am not a climatologist. I do know, you know, a little bit about the supposed effects if the Gulf Stream was to stop. And one of those would be the area that I'm in, for example, the northeast of America. I should probably start to head down south a little bit further if that was the case. Is that
right? Well, if you're within 100 miles or I don't know how far in, the Gulf Stream affects the weather in the United States. But you can tell, I mean, the farther west you go, the colder it gets at your latitude, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and you can tell how bad your winters will be by looking several hundred miles due west of where you are, and that's probably the kind of winter you're going to get if the Gulf Stream has stopped. And you're in Massachusetts, correct?
Yeah, western Massachusetts.
Look due west, 300 or 400 miles.
Okay.
And look at what their weather is, and that's what you're probably looking at.
Okay. Well, I don't know if that really differs that much from what we get now. I was just referring to the movie. We would basically be under, you know, 100 feet of ice. So, and I know it's a movie.
That to happen. I know, and I'm not looking for that to happen yet. In the film, they didn't have a pole shift.
Right.
I don't believe.
No, not in the
movie. No, maybe they did.
In Day After Tomorrow, I don't think so. Maybe they did, actually. I don't recall.
Because
everybody was living in Mexico by the end of it.
Right. Maybe they did have a pole shift in that film. I need to look at it again. One of the funny things about that film is, first of all, it was made during a presidential election cycle. And they didn't know who was going to get elected president. And they had these two roles to be covered, president and vice president. So they picked the actor pretending to be the president looking just like Al Gore and the actor pretending to be the vice president looking just like Dick Cheney. Think about it. What I'm saying is very true. Are you there, Darren? Hello, Darren. Is anybody there? I can't hear anybody. If you're hearing me, I can't hear you. Hello, hello, hello. Testing, 1, 2, 3. This is John Moore, and I don't have a clue if anybody can hear me.
I'm back.
You're back.
Yeah, Skype dropped me.
Okay.
This doesn't usually happen. Yeah, I can hear you. This doesn't usually happen, John.
Well, as Bo Greitz would say, you know you're over the target if you're taking flak.
Great.
This may be inadvertent. It's hard to say.
Right.
I got enough real conspiracies without making them up on, you know, on every radio show I do. I've read probably between 5,000 and 6,000 pages of books and documents on these matters related to Planet X. Interviewed about 24 Navy veterans who've been to the classified briefings. This has been a long project for me. I recommend people do as I've done, become a student of Professor Mechanic. He has a lot of books, but three of them are related to this topic. They're all at his website. There's a link to my website, thelibertyman.com.
Okay.
You need to read Zachariah Sitchin's books. You need to read Velikovsky's books. You need to do your own research. Don't make life-changing decisions based on what a radio talk show host tells you.
No.
You need to do your own homework. Do your own research. I had a young man call me up about a month ago, Darren. He watched my DVD just like you did. He says, John, my wife is a flight attendant. She and I both stopped work for 10 days to verify independently what you say in your DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. And, John, we verified it. Everything you say is true. And anybody can do this. I've done trial preparation for a lot of serious criminal and civil matters for 38 years now, Darren. So I know what trial preparation is, and that's how I put this DVD together, just like I was preparing for a trial. The people watching it are the jury, and I'm the presenter, presenting evidence for you to make up your own mind whether it's true or not true.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I use the quote from the movie The Matrix. Morpheus told Neo, nobody can tell you what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's very true. And to a certain extent, you know, it's a the whole series is fun. And anytime they got attractive young women in skin tight leather outfits, I'm always interested.
Sure.
But
why they're dressed like that.
Absolutely. I mean, they know how to trip my trigger. But the whole series of films, the Matrix series, is very well done. And it stimulates thought. It does stimulate thought. And I spent my young adult life up until about 1988. A friend of mine, a man I served with in military intelligence, he said, John, you got to read this book. And the book was titled The Unseen Hand by Ralph Epperson, E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N, The Unseen Hand by Ralph Epperson.
Okay.
And it was an eye-opening event for me to read this book, and I appreciate the footnotes in the back of it. About 20 or more pages of footnotes going back to original source material about what's been going on in this country the last 200-plus years. And it changed my life. I became a political activist after reading the book. I found out that I'd been lied to about almost every major event in American history, including my war, the Vietnam War. And I encourage people to get a copy of the book. You can probably get a copy off Amazon for maybe $3 or $4. I haven't looked recently.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's even still in print. It may be, it may not be.
Okay.
But that was my wake-up call. And I kind of felt like, you know, I took the, which blue was a wake-up, which pill was a wake-up pill? Was it the red pill or the blue one?
It was the blue pill.
The blue one, yeah. I felt like I took the blue pill after reading that book.
Yes.
It definitely woke me up out of being asleep in the Matrix.
Yeah. I mean, I think the movie is very relevant in that whole portrayal. It really, you know, I don't know, a lot of sense. It's one of my favorite all-time movies because of that. But can we talk about maybe some preparedness measures?
Absolutely.
Now that we've scared the hell out of everybody.
If people are motivated by two things, love and fear. And if it takes a little fear, then, you know, then let's jump off the railroad tracks here and figure out how to get prepared.
All right.
First and most important thing, Darren, is spiritual preparedness. We know from the experience of American POWs in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, that Americans who went into that POW experience with a strong spiritual foundation were far more likely to survive it than those that did not. Eating the same food, having the same medical treatment, wearing the same clothes, having the same living conditions. So that's number one. It's not my job as a radio talk show host to tell you what your spiritual preparedness should be. I do feel a responsibility to advise you to take care of that part of your life and get it squared away. Next comes skills. Now, there's lots of skills for both short-term and long-term preparedness, but what your local fire chief and sheriff and chief of police is going to be looking for is men and women who have the following two skills: emergency medical training and ham radio skills. That's the two skills most valuable and most in demand during either a short-term or a long-term crisis. Otherwise, you're looking at all the skills commonly found on farms and ranches all over this country. multiple skills. But I asked people and suggest that they concentrate on those two skills, the skills of a ham radio operator and the skills of emergency medical treatment. That's what will keep people alive, is those two skills.
Right. Right. Now, when you start to get into the whole survival preparedness thing, it becomes overwhelming. You realize you have so many, chinks
it
in the
can
armor.
Be.
Yeah,
It can be. You know, if you're living on a self-sufficient farm or ranch already, you may look around and say, hey, I'm already living this lifestyle. Not much in my life's going to change. If you're in a studio apartment in a major city of 50,000 or more people and don't have any food stored away, don't have any skills, you don't own an automobile or a truck to even get out of town, yeah, you're going to be looking at a pretty steep learning curve and spending a lot of money to have any hope at surviving any kind of crisis.
So there's
a lot of people in between.
Yeah.
Depending on your age, your health, your physical condition, your financial wherewithal, where you live, what you own now, what skills you have now, there's a wide variety of entry-level situations for people.
Okay. So you say, now, when you mentioned ham radio skills and first
emergency
aid,
medical, right,
emergency
right.
medical, now you
right.
said that in reference to being able to help out, you know, municipalities or whatever,
but
let's just say, for example, I live in a small town. The police here, you know, I don't know, I can't picture them really, I see them screaming, running into the hills like schoolgirls, like the rest of us will be doing too, but I mean, for the individual that doesn't plan on working with police, maybe, I mean, because I don't think people can really, you know, count on that.
In most small communities, your sheriff's deputies, your small town police departments, and your volunteer fire departments are going to be the people that are going to be taking care of the community. That's a fact of life, Darren. You may not want to recognize that or
Oh no! That's not what I was saying, John. I just mean there's not many around here. We don't really have a viable police force. So
you've got a county sheriff's department.
Yeah, well, I've never seen him, so I couldn't tell you who he is or where.
Well, and you have a volunteer fire department, probably.
We do have that, and I know where that is.
Okay, that'll be these men and women are, you know, they've got paramedics, they got trained. Even volunteer fire departments have professional training these days, and they have some experience with communications equipment. Almost every community has licensed ham radio people, and many communities, even at the county level especially, will have a ham radio club. These are extremely valuable skills, even within your family. Let's say, Darren, you've got siblings or aunts or uncles or cousins that live within a 50-mile radius of where you live. Would that be the case for you?
It would not be the case.
Okay.
But I have friends, and yes, so let's just say yes.
Let's say you got close friends.
Yes.
You're concerned about them, they're concerned about you. It's in a severe crisis, all it takes for the phones to go down is system overload, too many people wanting to make telephone calls at the same time. During the school year, it happens just about every weekday at about 3 to 3:30 when all these kids get off school and they got cell phones.
Right.
That's all it takes. So unless you've got radios that you own and you control, yourself and your friends or family members, that you can talk to each other, you may not be able to talk to each other. You may not be able to share information. Even between a husband and wife, who's going to get the kids at school during a crisis?
Right.
Well, a husband or a wife may risk their life to get to school to pick up the kids that have already been picked up by the mom. You know, what a waste that would be. So radios are very essential to survival and life and death in any severe crisis, short-term or long-term. I know during Hurricane Katrina we found that out once again. Every major crisis, the ham radio men and women step up to the plate and provide communications when otherwise there would be none whatsoever. The Ham Radio Club I'm affiliated with, they could set up a mirror image communications for every police department and fire department in my county if the main one should go south due to a lightning strike or a tornado or whatever it might be, earthquake. We could set up a completely redundant system and keep these men and women on the job saving lives, which is what police and fire and paramedics do, is save lives and protect property.
Right. Now, when I think of preparedness and survival, I usually think of what can kill me first, and that would be, I would think, temperature and lack
air.
Of water.
Air.
Air.
Air. You'll die without air in minutes.
Well,
it takes several days to die without water. But bad water, the first drink you take of bad water, Darren, it's a one-way ticket to diarrhea, dehydration, and death.
Right. Yep.
So
well,
I
personally have some decent preparedness measures in place. That being one of them.
Good.
So
good.
You know, I just like when people are listening to this program, I just, you know, I want them to be able to look at and assess the situation that they're in personally, and then determine where their weaknesses are. And I think across the board, it has to be the ability to filter water, communication. You know, when you mention the ham radio, and I think to myself, what can kill me first? Well, lack of communication can get me killed, not knowing what's happening.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So definitely that's something that I have to look into, and I wasn't really taking into consideration. So. You know,
well, communications is one of the most overlooked parts of preparedness. Men tend to gravitate towards defensive measures. I want to protect my wife and my teenage daughter from being kidnapped and raped and murdered.
Right.
Women tend to look towards domestic things. Oh, my goodness, how am I going to do laundry without hot and cold running water under 40 pounds of pressure? You know, that's a big deal. How am I going to prepare meals without electricity and without hot and cold running water? Women tend to look towards these practical things, which is normal, and they should be doing that. Things that get overlooked are communications, emergency medical preparedness, and simple things like, how am I going to bathe? How am I going to flush the commode? How am I going to stay clean? The majority of casualties in any war are due to injury and disease. That's true of almost all wars. Injury and disease cause the most accidents as opposed to being hurt in combat. And that the same thing applies in any kind of crisis, whether it's an earthquake, a flood, a tornado, a hurricane, whatever it might be. The majority of your casualties are going to come from simple things like a cut that gets infected, or diarrhea because you drank bad water, or other things because you can't have proper hygiene.
Yeah, people don't realize that a simple cut at the wrong time can be deadly.
Goes septic, yeah.
Yeah.
Food goes bad because you don't have refrigeration. So there's a multitude of things we take for granted. You know, we expect to hit that switch and the light goes on. We expect to turn a faucet and either hot or cold potable water comes out the faucet. Now, you take these things for granted until they're not there. Then it becomes a really big deal really quick.
Right.
I have a 2-DVD series on my website, by the way, that deals specifically with preparedness.
Okay. All right.
So.
Well, like I said, I'm going to post up all your information, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of feedback on this program. Now, as far as Planet X goes, is there any type of any timeline? Do you have any idea where it's supposed to be right now?
The only date I've got is the date the government gave themselves, Darren, to get their major preparations finished.
Okay.
They gave themselves until December 31st, 2009. Now, the original due date was December 31st, 2010. They moved it closer in time by one full calendar year because they realized they didn't have until December 31st, 2010 to get done what they wanted to get done. Now, that being said, they still continue to make preparations. It was only this past fall of 2009 that NSA announced building this computer center 20 miles south of Salt Lake City. They continue preparations, and they will. They'll continue building things and doing things up until the last minute, until they have no more time.
Right.
I just found out recently about a big communications command and control center being built near the California-Oregon border, not far from the coast. Huge command and control center in that area.
Now, see, I get a little confused with things like that, because on the flood, on some flood maps, I mean, that area I thought would be underwater. And that also brings me to the point, on your video, I think you said the Missouri Ozarks. Is that where you are right now, actually?
Right, right. That's where I am, right.
Now, those are supposed to be a safe spot, but when I looked on the flood map on your DV, it looked to me like Missouri was pretty much underwater.
That's the extreme eastern part where the Mississippi gets wide. That's really not part of the Ozarks. There's something called the Delta area of Missouri where they grow a lot of rice.
Uh-huh.
Extreme southeast Missouri and extreme northeast Arkansas is very flat. It's not part of the Ozarks. That flat area that's not part of the Ozarks, that's probably going to be underwater.
Okay.
It's an excellent cotton and rice producing area now, but it's very flat and it's not part of the geographical area known as the Ozarks.
Okay. I've also seen some flood maps, as I was looking for myself, and it looked as though the Berkshire Mountains up west of me seemed to be poking out of water. But to be honest with you, John, I wouldn't count on that because there was too much water around them, and,
right,
you know,
right,
I'd
right.
still head a little farther.
Well,
west
there's a bunch of maps posted on the Internet, about 20 or so. The majority of them done by psychics. Gordon Michael Scallions is the most well-known and most famous. The map that I did is based on the Navy's map. It's been reviewed by multiple Navy veterans who helped me put this map together. And I spent hours and hours with three different Navy veterans. One was an officer from another service who spent an intelligence officer who did a three-year tour of duty with the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. But I spent many hours reviewing this map and making it to conform with the Navy's classified map.
That brings me to another thing. This classified information, has it been declassified? Is that why you're able to talk about it?
I talk about it. If they want to prosecute me for this, they can prosecute me. This is no secret from our enemies, the Russians and Chinese. It's classified for the American people.
Right.
They want to keep
right.
the American people in the dark, and revealing this information is the right thing to do. And no, they're not going to come after me, because the only way they can do that is to admit that it's real.
Right. Right. Well, you could die in a heart attack.
You know, the only way they can come after me is to admit that their map showing East Coast, West Coast, and Gulf Coast underwater is real, and they don't want to do that.
Right, right. But like I said, you could have an impromptu heart attack. So.
As a 60-year-old, I ran a 100-meter dash in 15.31 seconds. So that's unlikely to happen.
That's pretty quick.
It's pretty quick, and that's unlikely to happen due to natural causes. So if John Moore has a heart attack, you know it wasn't a natural event.
That is exactly what I was implying. Not that it would happen naturally.
Well, that's unlike. I'm not kind of holding my breath. That's not going to happen, Darren. I'm not concerned about it.
You know, my thing, because people ask me that, well, if these people know what they're talking about, wouldn't they be taken out? And my answer really is, for what? I mean,
some people would be, and they have been, like Dr. Harrington, for example. Dr. Robert Harrington, supervising astronomer, United States Naval Observatory. He went public, and he's what we would call a credentialed scientist with a lot of credibility. And he went public, and he didn't get the memo, kind of tongue-in-cheek, he didn't get the memo, talk about this and you die. He went public about Planet X in the 1980s. Shortly after that, within months, he allegedly died from a fast-acting form of cancer.
He's fast acting. That's
oh yeah,
sure.
Must. He was dead less than 6 months after he found out he had it.
What was his name?
Dr. Robert Harrington, supervising astronomer, United States Naval Observatory. Go to my website. You'll see a DVD put together by Zachariah Sitchin, where he interviews Dr. Harrington in his office at the United States Naval Observatory. Dr. Harrington supervising astronomer at the United States Naval Observatory, talking about Planet X as a scientific fact, not as scientific speculation.
Okay. All right.
Now, you're not going to find any better evidence. If you're going to draw a paycheck, Darren, for looking at stars, there's no upward mobility from that point.
Right, exactly.
You know, supervising astronomer, United States Naval Observatory. And you see this gentleman, and you see, well, here's a nerd. And he's got the heavy horn-rim glasses, the pocket protector stuck in his pocket full of ink pens.
Right.
God bless him, you know. He's the nerd's nerd. But that's who you'd expect to be in that position, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm sure he was probably recruited for that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever
absolutely. Yeah.
Now, a few odds and ends here. Let me just ask you, what do you think about the Norway spiral event?
Well, it's real. It was photographed by multiple cameras and video. I mean,
do you accept the official story? Do you think that's what
was
a rocket?
No, no, I don't. There was a man who uses a pen name, Lucas.
Yep, I was getting to Lucas. I was going to ask you what you thought of the presentation.
Well, I know him. We've talked. Lucas and I have talked privately.
Okay.
And I do publicly recommend his DVD that he put together. The show that he put on, the presentation he put on at that bookstore in Texas was very poorly done in terms of audio and video quality. The information is excellent, but the quality of the video is very amateur.
Yes.
Watch it anyway.
Yes, that's what I tell people. I say, don't watch it for the production value. Watch it for the information.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's... Oh, I wish somebody would have spent just a little bit of money and had some professional audio people, you know, videographers there.
Yeah.
It was... I mean, this man... I have some idea of how much editing time was done to put together what he did. It had to be maybe a couple hundred hours minimum to edit and put together what he put together.
Yeah.
A tremendous amount of
it. It's becoming very popular very fast.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, it seems so. I mean, every time I turn around and, well, I'm starting to become, you know, like get into this whole circle of this kind of thing. So I hear about him everywhere. I'm actually going to try to get him onto my program. I don't know how that'll go, but I hope I can do it.
Well, he's doing a life transition himself, moving to what he regards to be a safe area. And I haven't talked to Lucas for a good, it's probably January when I talked to him. So it's been half a year at least.
Okay. Now we have about 12 minutes left, John. You mentioned aliens before, and you think that's why, or the whole UFO thing that goes on. You think that's kind of like a cover thing. Do you think there's anything more to it? And
well, there is, and there's more to the alien thing than what I stated.
And do you subscribe to the Anunnaki and the whole Sumerian thing?
Well, the Bible keeps being proven by archaeology. Time and time again, the Bible is proven by archaeology to be true and to be an accurate historical document. And just because I say that us plain old human beings had high technology does not preclude aliens visiting here from other places. And
right.
I have private confirmation from several private sources that, yes, what happened at Roswell did happen at Roswell, and alien technology was recovered, and they immediately started reverse engineering it. In fact, it wasn't too long after that we went from a world of vacuum tubes to a world of solid-state circuitry, almost overnight. There were three scientists, I think, with Bell Labs that took credit for developing transistors. That was my information. That was reverse engineered alien technology, is what transistors are. But that's okay. I can live with both. I can live with plain old human beings having had the ability to crack the atom in spaceflight 12,000 years ago, and I can also live with the fact that aliens have been visiting our planet for at least 60 years, possibly longer.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't expecting, you know, an answer of, oh yes, it means this. I thought it was going to be exactly what you said, a combination and both, you know, as far as technology goes. When I asked you earlier, I know I'm getting a little sporadic in my questioning because I'm
That's
just
okay.
trying to squeeze things in as we end this.
You have
thing.
A smart audience. I can keep up with us.
Hear that, you guys? So when I asked about, you know, about how close you think it is, and you said the government moved up their date.
Okay, we moved on from there. Let me get a little more clarity here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a date. First of all, this December 12th, 2012 stuff.
And John, let me say, I'm not trying to pin you down to a date. I'm not trying to. I'm just wondering what you think. Okay.
Well, this 2012 December 12th, 21st thing is going to get a lot of people hurt. The winter solstice of 2012 is not something any serious researcher I'm aware of is concerned about. What I'm concerned about is between now and then, 2010, right. 2011. What I'm seeing is what I expect to be seeing. Earlier this year, I was referring to the earthquake of the week. That
yes.
looked like for the first 2 months, we were having the earthquake of the week. Dramatically large, violent, devastating, deadly earthquakes. And they continue to happen in places that central Oklahoma, for example, is known to be very seismically neutral. It's been having a lot of earthquakes. North-central Arkansas, not known to be attached to the New Madrid seismic zone, has been having a lot of earthquakes.
I heard like 36 earthquakes in Arkansas in recent history.
Yes, sir.
36?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Bizarre weather events. For example, there's two states between me and the Gulf of Mexico. We had a hurricane right here where I'm sitting, April the 8th, 2009. Now, hurricanes aren't supposed to happen over dry land, especially hundreds and hundreds of miles from any ocean. But that's exactly what happened. We had a hurricane that moved across Arkansas, Missouri Ozarks, April the 8th, 2009. So we will continue to have increases in the number and severity of earthquakes, volcanism, volcanoes, and weather-related events as we get deeper into this cycle. And that's what I'm expecting to see, and that's what I am seeing. I don't have anything more than that to say about the time frame. We are in the time frame.
Right.
The government has given themselves a lot of time and a lot of money to get ready for this, and they're pretty much ready. All their major preparations are done. They've got their deep underground bunkers stocked with freeze-dried food, DVD movies, everything they need to live, work, and play for at least a decade, probably, if they need to.
You think they have your DVD down there, John?
Oh, I think my DVD has made it into some interesting places by now.
Okay. So, I mean, I agree. I think we're in it. I think the 2012 date is false information.
Look at these websites. We've got major Hollywood productions focusing on that.
Right.
The websites, now, you look at my website, you can tell it's a nice one, but you can tell it's not from a Fortune 500 company.
Right.
You look at some of these 2012 websites, it's, oh, my goodness, you know, there's been a lot of money spent there. You look at McCanny's, it's obvious Jim does it himself.
Exactly.
God bless
yes.
him.
I've been to his website. You know, let me just ask you, I mean, a lot of people in the Planet X, in the researcher circle, put a lot of stake in Mr. McCanny's stuff. And I'm just asking you, why do you think that is? I don't know. I don't really know his credential. And so
well,
I'm just really asking.
He is a credentialed astrophysicist. He's a credentialed scientist. He did his work, theoretical work at Cornell University, where he had access to the live satellite feeds and coming in from NASA. Yes, he is a credentialed scientist, and he carries a lot of weight within the community of researchers that are concerned about the 10th planet or Planet X, a lot of weight. And people would be well advised to read his books, not just read what's been read about, what's been stated about Professor McCanny, but actually read his books. He has hundreds and hundreds of hours of what amount to university-level lectures archived at his website that anybody can listen to at no charge, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And he's the real deal. I think highly of him. We've become friends over the years. We visited in person several times. I've been up to his hometown up in Minnesota several times. And we talk frequently on the telephone. He's been a guest on my radio show. I can't even count how many times at this point. Yes, he's the real deal. And there are people who claim to have credentials that have none. A lot of disinformation out there, especially this 2012 stuff. It's going to get a lot of people hurt, Darren, is what it's going to do.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I don't think people... Well, you know, the thing I think about that is, you know, we think that people are kind of get caught, you know, surprised or taken by surprise because things might get worse before then. But, you know, if you know what to look for, and this is what I tell people, watch the weather, watch what's going on, because these are the signs that are showing you that things are changing. And
that's right.
And, you know, if I find it hard to believe that at some point most people won't be aware that something is drastically wrong. Whether they realize that they shouldn't probably be going to work anymore and start thinking about, you know, preparing, you know, I don't know. I hope people do, but, you know how people are. I don't know. I don't think that that'll be any big secret as it starts to get worse and worse. You know, I mean, the people
right.
that are living in
right.
Mississippi, they're well aware of the fact now. Whether or not they understand what just happened to them with that flooding, I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, the flash floods in Arkansas and the dam breaking in Iowa yesterday. What else do we have? We had the 400 people dying in Peru due to record temperature freezing. And we
right.
have Moscow
right.
on fire, hottest temperatures in 130 years.
Right. Exactly, since they've been keeping records, probably.
I mean, now, if they put all that information on tonight's news, that whole chain, you know, people might take notice, but obviously
that's not going to happen.
Right, right.
It's not good for business. The Chamber of Commerce does not want that kind of information going out. That's not
right.
going to happen, Darren.
Right.
Now, I want to leave people with some thoughts here, because I know we're almost out of time.
Yep.
Do your own homework. Do your own research, ladies and gentlemen. You know, my website can get you going. I have a list of recommended books at my website. My DVD is it's very valuable. It's helped people understand a very complex matter. We've had 2 hours to talk about this. I've read more than 5,000 pages to get up to speed on this, Darren, and interviewed several dozen Navy veterans. Most people aren't going to do what I did. My two-hour DVD is a very compact version, condensed version of what it took me literally almost 20 years to learn. So it's an excellent education and a very compact source. Global warming, what the government isn't telling you.
Yep, and I'll be posting links to that also, John. I want to get the word out to as many people as possible.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate you taking the time.
It's been fun. I'm going to go... cook a steak and have a beer, I think.
Yeah, you know what? I'll do something fairly similar, John. If you don't mind, I'd love to have you come back sometime in the
Yeah, we can do that, Darren. Let's stay in touch. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good,
good,
John.
Thank you,
Thank
sir.
You
have
very
a good
much.
Evening. You're
you
welcome.
Too.
All right. Bye.
Bye. All right. And there he goes, everybody. My guest, John Moore. I thought it went pretty well. I'm sorry if we skipped around all over the place. There's just so many things to cover, and he had so much knowledge. Didn't know really where to stop or start, but I hope you guys all got something out of it. I will be posting links to his video on YouTube. It's very simple, though. You can just go to YouTube and search global warming, what the government isn't telling you, and it'll come right up. It's a 12-part series. I think it lasts about an hour and a half total. If you guys have any questions, you know, you can email him through his website, or you can email me at thefront@live.com. I'll forward it to him. I'll be in touch with him, and we'll get him back on the show pretty soon. But I just want to say thank you all. Thank you guys for hanging in chat. Good group in chat tonight. Thank you everybody else out there listening. I will see you guys on Thursday. No guest scheduled for Thursday at this point. And if anybody has any suggestions, you want me to get guests on about certain topics, please email me, thefront@live.com. And with that, I will leave you with a song that I'm picking out just off the top of my head. And why don't we go with this one? Have a good night.